Towards the end of November in 1942, word reached the yeshuv, the community in Israel for the first time, about the full magnitude of the destruction of European Jewry that was then already well underway. Although from virtually the very beginning of the war, Jews in Israel had heard about the terrible deteriorating situation of their co-religionists in Europe, they discredited and they dismissed those reports as rumor and exaggeration. It was simply impossible for them to imagine that they could possibly be true. It was only now, in November of 1942, when a group of close to 70 eyewitnesses arrived from Europe, bearing firsthand testimony to the tragedy that was already unfolding, that they began to realize the enormity of the destruction. The horrible news about the mass killings, the death factories, and so many other atrocities was now considered to be authoritative and reliable, and previous skepticism and doubt gave way to shocking acknowledgement and frightening acceptance. There was no longer any doubt for the yeshuv in Israel and for the world at large that a calculated, methodical, total, ruthless physical extermination and systematic genocide of the Jewish people was now underway. Reaction to this terrible news took different forms. On November 22, 1942, the Jewish Agency executive, which was the highest political governing body of the yeshuv, met for the first time in a session that was devoted exclusively to the Jewish situation in Europe. It proposed a three-day period beginning November 30th of days of alarm, protest, and call to action. Quote, 3 days we're going to devote, beginning a little bit over a week from now, or about a week from now, we're going to focus on days of alarm, protest, and call to action. The third day, in particular, December 2nd, will be designated as a day devoted to prayer and to fasting. And we have newspaper reports, indeed, that, quote, 100,000 people participated in memorial programs in different communities on those days. Furthermore, in addition, an entire month of mourning was established from December 18, 1942 to January 16, 1943, with each Thursday set aside for fasting and prayer, although these later days were not as widely observed. As one would expect, the day of the 9th of Av played a very significant role in these discussions as well. Already in and around the 9th of Av of 1942, already a special memorial prayer for the victims of the Holocaust was composed by the chief rabbinate in England and recited there on the 9th of Av. 2 days before the 9th of Av, in July 21st, 1942, well over 20,000 people attended a rally in and around Madison Square Garden in New York City that was addressed by New York Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia and others to protest Nazi atrocities. On Tisha B'Av itself in that year, the chaplain of the United States House of Representatives opened that day's session of the House with a prayer for the Jews who were being murdered. Later on, towards the end of the war, the chief rabbinate of Israel established the fast day of the 10th of Tevet, of the 10th month, as what they called, Hebrew and translation, Yom HaKadish HaKlali, which means Universal Kaddish Day, a day that they determined should be set aside for the recital annually of Kaddish by those who did not know the date of the murder, the death of their loved ones. According to Jewish tradition, on the anniversary of the death, this memorial prayer is recited. Well, I don't know the anniversary of the death. I don't know when my loved one was killed. And so we're going to decide that we're going to do this day, we're going to set aside and designate the 10th of the month of Teves. That's going to be the day that, if you don't know, that's when you're going to say Kaddish. You may remember from the second presentation that this was already a designated fast day, already mentioned in the Bible, the fast of the 10th month. And you may remember that the reason why it was established was because it commemorated the besieging of the city of Jerusalem. The reason why that date was chosen way back in biblical times, because on that day, the first siege was placed around the city of Jerusalem. And the reasoning actually is actually logical. They explicitly stated, the chief rabbinate who set up this date, that the reason why we're choosing this date is because on the date that was already established for the beginning of the tragedy, first there was a siege, and then there was a breach, and then there was a destruction. So it started with, it began with the events of the 10th month. A day that's set aside to remember the beginning should also be a day that will be set aside to remember the end. It was their clear belief, I would say hope, and maybe even more than hope, that this is it. This is going to be the last Jewish tragedy. We're now going to come full circle from the beginning of the first to the end of the last. And that's why they chose this particular day. After the war, some 150,000 Holocaust survivors made their way to Israel. And when the state was founded in May of 1948, they constituted about 25% of the population of Jews who were living in the newly founded state of Israel. The rough population was 600,000, about 25%, 150,000, quite a substantial number were Holocaust survivors who somehow figured out a way to crawl on their fingernails after what they had experienced to come to the land of Israel. State of Israel is founded and we have a Declaration of Independence. You may know that today the State of Israel has no constitution. It's a subject of a lot of discussion. There is no constitution in the State of Israel, but there is a Declaration of Independence. Text number one. And the Holocaust figures prominently in the Declaration of Independence. In the land of Israel, the Jewish people came into being. That's how it begins. Be'eretz Yisrael, Kam Ha'am HaYehudi. In this land was shaped their spiritual, religious, and national character. Here they lived in sovereign independence. Here they created a culture of national and universal import and gave to the world the eternal book of books. And now we continue the history. Exiled by force, still the Jewish people kept faith with their land and all the countries of their dispersion, even though they weren't living there anymore, but they still felt connected to it, steadfast in their prayer and hope to return and here revive their political freedom. Fired by this attachment of history and tradition, the Jews in every generation strove to renew their roots in their ancient homeland, and in recent generations, now we've just skipped over a couple of thousand years of Jewish history, in recent generations they came home in their multitudes. And the pioneers come, and the wilderness blooms, and the Hebrew tongue is revived, and villages and towns are built, and a thriving society is founded, and peace is pursued, and in 1897, the first Zionist Congress. Next paragraph, in 1917, the Balfour Declaration. Next paragraph. The Holocaust that in our time destroyed millions of Jews in Europe again proved beyond doubt the compelling need to solve the problem of Jewish homelessness and dependence by the renewal of the Jewish state in the land of Israel. The Holocaust has a place in the narrative of the founding of the State of Israel. Namely, it just shows how important it is to have a State of Israel, which would open wide the gates of the homeland to every Jew and endow the Jewish people with the status of a nation with equality of rights within the family of nations. Despite every hardship, hindrance, and peril, The remnant that survived the grim Nazi slaughter in Europe, together with Jews from other countries, pressed on with their exodus to the land of Israel. About 150,000 survivors, about a quarter of our population, came to Israel and continued to assert their right to a life of dignity, freedom, honest toil in the homeland of their people. A little bit about the Second World War. Then 1947, the General Assembly adopts a resolution calling for the establishment of the Jewish state. And lo and behold, we're now in May of 1948, and now we do have indeed a Jewish state. Holocaust is significant in the backstory leading up to the state of Israel and is explicitly referred to quite substantially in the foundational document expressing the founding of the state of Israel, namely the Declaration of Independence. In the early years after the founding of the state, discussion took place regarding the formalization of some kind of an official commemoration of this horrific catastrophe. You can understand with 25% of the population as survivors, people are mourning, people are distraught, groups get together, Landsmannschaften from this community and from this community and from this community. And so we have very localized, certainly we have personal commemoration and mourning, but the need was felt to try to somehow make this national. The first speaker of the Israeli Knesset, whose name was Yosef Shprintzak, understood how important this would be. Not enough here and there and this little place and this little place, how important it would be for the state of Israel, the newly founded state of Israel, to somehow commemorate this as a country. And he appointed a subcommittee, which he charged with the responsibility of determining what exact form this commemoration should take. The committee consisted of four MKs, four members of Knesset. The chairman was Rabbi Mordechai Nurak. He was a rabbi, he was a leader already in Latvia, and his wife and two children were killed during the Holocaust. And he himself dragged himself, as the sole survivor of his family, to come to the land of Israel. He gets himself elected to the Knesset as a religious Zionist, a member of Mafdal, the religious Zionist party. He's now a member of the Knesset. He is chosen by Shprintzak to be the chairman of this committee. Shprintzak understood that on the one hand, we're living in a new state of Israel, and the state of Israel is a secular state, and so forms of whatever have to be reflective of the entire population. But at the same time, he had a feeling that it should have some kind of a Jewish character to it, that it should somehow be informed by Jewish values, by Jewish tradition. And who better than Rabbi Nurak, who is a traditional Jew and who is a member of Knesset of the newly founded state of Israel, to be able to figure out a way or to orchestrate a committee that would be able to find a way how to somehow bring all of these different elements together. The subcommittee met a couple of times in the winter of 1951, and the minutes of those subcommittee meetings are available in the archives of the Knesset. A number of years ago, I had the privilege to be granted permission to examine them. It's not so simple. You know, in Israel, you have to know somebody who knows somebody who once was on a bus next to somebody who once served in the army with somebody who had a cousin who had a somebody and who knew a neighbor of a something. And I ended up connecting to the assistant archivist of the Knesset, and I got permission to go in, and it was actually quite remarkable. I walked in, I told them what I'm interested in, and they came out with a whole pile of material, and I started to take notes, and I realized this is impossible. I'll be here for days and days and days. Then after a while, I asked them, can I make copies of this material? The material is old, yellow, falling apart, mimeographed sheets of paper. We don't even know what mimeographed is anymore. And it was very, very brittle. And they didn't even have it yet in any plastic. The second time I came around, each page was already in a separate plastic. Here was, and they said, okay, fine, sure, come. I'd be happy for you to copy it. I made copies about, I probably 600 pages worth of copies. And then I said, how much do I owe you? And they said, nothing. And I said, oh my God, this is amazing. You're being so kind to me. And I walked off with a lot of material, minutes of the subcommittee and of other related meetings and discussions. And so now all of this is in two places in the world, in the Knesset archives and in my house. Of all of this material, for the sake of our discussion today, I'm bringing you the text on page 2. One of the meetings was March 13, 1951, and the discussion is particularly fascinating. First of all, the name. I give you the original at the bottom. You see it's typed. I could imagine somebody's just sitting there typing and various Hebrew letters like the Samach. There's a hole in the paper because it's a circle. So it's really old. And the Mem is, there's a hole in the paper. So you have the original at the bottom. You have the translation at the top. First of all, the name. What was the name, the original name of the day that the state of Israel was considering setting aside to commemorate the Holocaust? 6 million Jews are killed. 150,000 survivors are living in Israel. The name of the day is Hebrew, Yom Mered Hagita'ot. English, Ghetto Uprising Day. Ghetto Uprising Day. Ghetto Uprising Day is the name of the day that will commemorate the totality of the Holocaust. Now, Ghetto Uprising Day, there were a number of ghetto uprisings, but when we think of ghetto, singular Uprising Day, we think of the Warsaw Ghetto. Ghetto Uprising Day. Warsaw Ghetto Uprising Day, and a few other uprisings. Why is this so? How do we understand a name and a concept for a date that describes the totality of Jewish catastrophe and destruction through the lens of ghetto uprising? So we have to understand a little bit about what's going on in Israel at that time. Israel in the early years of its founding was very much embarrassed by the Holocaust, those who were living in Israel. Not just struck by it and overwhelmed by it, but embarrassed by it. Because for them, the Holocaust represented the epitome of Jewish powerlessness. And they actually utilized a verse that's found in the Bible that is very harsh and that was used repeatedly already. The earliest time I found it was already in 1939, that the Jews went to their deaths, katzon latevach, like sheep to the slaughter, which is a damning indictment, which is unfair, but that was their perspective. Jews went like sheep to the slaughter. They were passive. They just lined up and that they were killed. And they, those who were living in the Yishuv, were determined that this will never happen again. We are now going to have a state where we're going to be tough and we're going to be strong and we're not going to be pushed over and we're going to fight our enemies and we're going to assert our right to live and assert our right to be able to express ourselves, and we're never, ever again going to be able to be in such a position. And so the Holocaust represented for them an embarrassment. The only way that they could conceivably connect to the Holocaust was to try to extract from the Holocaust an event that they could identify with, namely Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Oh my God, you see? They fought. They did fight. They did fight back. We're going to connect with this total disaster and destruction through a lens of something that means something to us, something that is significant to us. We're fighting back. Nobody's ever going to push us around. Well, in Warsaw, they didn't let the Nazis push them around. We're going to link to the Holocaust via the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And so, as crazy as it sounds, how many people were involved in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising? So I'll give you a wild exaggeration, 400. Wild exaggeration, 400. We're talking 6 million. What about everybody else? What about even the partisans in the forest? What about those who lived lives of human decency and who were not in a position to pick up a Molotov cocktail and throw it at somebody? What about 6 million Jews? The only way they could get to the 6 million was by seeing it through something that would be resonating with them. So it's called Yom Meret Hagita'ot. What is it called today? It's called today Yom HaShoah. There's a second, Ve HaGivura. Yom HaShoah Ve HaGivura. We'll come to that. Originally, it's called Yom Meret Hagita'ot. Yom HaShoah Ve HaGivura means Holocaust and heroism day, fighting day, strength day. Chair Y. Harari, let us start debating the matter and adjourn at 9:30 when the Speaker of the Knesset will come. Okay. M. Nurak, Deputy Chair, participating in the subcommittee, this is a meeting of the Committee of the Knesset. The Chair of the Committee of the Knesset is Y. Harari. The Chair of the Subcommittee, the Deputy Chair of the Committee, so you have a Knesset, then you have a Committee of the Knesset, then you have a Subcommittee of the Knesset. M. Nurak is the Deputy Chair of the Committee of the Knesset. He's the Chair of the Subcommittee. Participating in the Subcommittee were members Tzizling Brenner and Aleph A. Raziel Naor. This is now Rabbi Nurak reporting to this smaller group the results of their even smaller group of just the four of them. The committee debated this, and all of us agreed that one single day should be designated for, and here it's called, Yom HaShoah VeHazikaron. Right, the nomenclature here is extremely significant. The technical official name is Ghetto Uprising Day. He is referring to it in his report as Shoah, Holocaust, and Memorial Day. And V'chein K'yom Mered Hagita'ot, and also Ghetto Uprising Day. So we had a discussion and we agreed we should have one day, because the context, once again, is this community has this day and this has this day and this individual mourns on that day. Everybody's involved. Those who are involved, but everybody's doing their own thing. We need one day. We did not reach a consensus with regard to the date. Three dates were proposed. So we got as far as saying we should have one day, but we weren't sure exactly what that day should be. Three dates were proposed, and we, in this course, now we're up to session number 7, are particularly sensitive to the choice of dates of commemoration. First, member of Knesset Tzizling, he suggested to establish the day on the eve of Passover. We should have it on Erev Pesach, the day before Passover. Why should we have it on the day before Passover? Because if we're consistent, that's when it should be. If this is called Ghetto Uprising Day, so the ghetto, capital T, the ghetto uprising began on the day before Passover, so we should have it on the day that the ghetto uprising began. Once again, beginning, it lasted for about 6 weeks or so. So which day are you going to choose that's going to determine the appropriateness of commemorating the ghetto uprising, which lasted 6 weeks? Well, we've seen this already repeatedly. We'll do it on the day that it began. When did it begin? It began the day before Pesach. That's what Tzizling said. E. Raziel Naor said it should be on the day that World War II broke out. Well, we have to do it on the day it began. What's the it? The Holocaust. When did the Holocaust begin? Big discussion. The suggestion here is began on September 1st, 1939. So let's find the Hebrew equivalent of September 1st, 1939, beginning, once again beginning, and that's the day that we should determine should be the day of commemoration for the Holocaust. And I proposed, Rabbi Nurak, the traditional Jew, the 10th of the month of Tevet, because as a traditional Jew, he knew that the chief rabbinate had already determined that that should be, and again, the Hebrew and then the English, Yom HaKadosh HaKlali. That should be universal Kaddish day. If you don't know when to say Kaddish, that's when you should say it. So that's really a day. And once again, the full circle, the date that commemorates the beginning of the beginning should commemorate the end of the end. Says Harari, did you propose a name for this day? Okay, so we know it's going to be a day. We know it's got to be, we have three options. You notice the three options, none of them ended up to be the accepted option, but we have three options on the table. And what's the name? So Tzizling jumps in and says, Lo Danu Bazeh. We really didn't focus a lot of attention on the name of the day. Ach Karanu Lekach, but we called it Yom Mered Hagita'ot, Ghetto Uprising, V'Zichron HaShoah, and Holocaust Memorial Day. So now we have Uprising and Holocaust Memorial. The order is also significant. Uprising first, began to realize that it can't just be uprising. Uprising is 0.00000000% of the Jews that were affected by the Holocaust. So we're going to tack on to Ghetto Uprising Day, we're going to tack on a Holocaust Memorial. Says Harari, is it the intention that the Knesset should pass a law or declare this day? Now, in Israeli legal parlance, there are a couple of options. One option is we pass a resolution that this is a very sad day and people should act accordingly on this day. The other option is we pass a law requiring. The law requires that certain things be done practically to commemorate this day. So what do you think? And Sizzling says the intention is to pass a law and instruct the government to implement. Not enough to pass a resolution, but we actually have to put some teeth into this and pass a law. The motion that I now make, this is Sizzling speaking, in the name of Knesset Brenner and in my name, we do not propose declaring a permanent day in the month, but to declare a day in the month of Nisan. There was a lot of discussion about a pushback. Remember, he was the one who suggested, what was his suggestion? Should do it the day before Passover, because that's the day that the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising began. You know what? I'm not really insistent upon doing it specifically on that day. It should be done during the month of Nisan. It should be during the month of when this event happened. It need not specifically be on the eve of Passover. It can be the day before or the day after. I'm going to read the Hebrew. It's three lines from the bottom. Ein ze, three lines from the bottom. Chayav lihiyot, davka, erev Pesach mamash. Doesn't have to specifically be the day before Passover. Ze yachol lihiyot. It's okay, you know, I'm prepared to compromise. I'm a good guy. It could be Yom Lifnei Zeh, the day before Passover, O Acharei Zeh, or the day after the day before Passover. I'm cool. I'm okay. You don't want to have it on that day? Have it the next day. Have it the previous day. Now, a number of people with whom I have shared this have been so sort of aghast at this, that Sizzling is a totally secular Jew with no use at all for tradition. Sizzling represents a whole perspective then and now in Israel where religion, you know, that was like the old country, and now we're in a new state, and now we're in a new reality, and now whatever was going on over there is gone and it's done, and we threw it overboard on the way on the boat coming to Palestine, and now we have a new state with a new set of values and a new set of behaviors and a new way of life and a new way of thinking. But still, how do you even begin to suggest that you should have Holocaust Memorial Day or Ghetto Uprising Day on the first day of Passover? And so people have told me that they read this not the day before the first, the day before Erev Pesach and the next day, but it means the day after the entire holiday of Passover. So it could either be the day before or the day after, not the next day, but the day after the holiday. The truth is, I really don't know. It doesn't sound like that to me. I think my reading is obviously sharper and highlights even more so this real Kulturkampf that's going on already in 1951 between different factions of Israeli society. Some for whom tradition matters, and some for whom tradition actually doesn't matter at all. Less than a month later, text number three, on April 11th, 1951, Rabbi Nurak ascended the Knesset podium to report on his subcommittee deliberations. What we have here is, first we have the minutes of the committee themselves, then we have the minutes of the committee of the Knesset to which this subcommittee reports, and now we're going all the way. Now he stands up in front of the Knesset and he tells the story. His speech is preserved in something called the Divrei Knesset. You can go to the library, probably even online, and look and find every single word in every single speech that was ever delivered in the Knesset. It is somewhat the equivalent of what we have in the United States called the congressional record, but the congressional record has a lot more than just the words that are recited and stated either in the House or in the Senate. On any given day, the congressional record could be a quarter of an inch thick, because any congressman or any senator who gives a speech before their local Kiwanis Club in front of six people can insert into the congressional record the text of that speech. So there are infinitely more speeches in the daily congressional record in the United States than there are in the Divrei Knesset. The Divrei Knesset, word for word, exactly, only limited to the speeches that are given from the plenum of the Knesset, and we have this speech. Speech is about three pages in Hebrew. It is, for me personally, probably the most gripping and intensely powerful speech that I have ever read. And I want to just read to you a little piece and focus and zero in on the part that is particularly relevant to us. I invite you to find it, and I invite you to read it. Here's somebody who gets up. You notice it begins with the chairman, Yosef Shprintzak, who says, and before that, let's get to the name. The name is the decision regarding the establishment of Yom HaShoah Umered HaGita'ot. So now we have Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Day first, but we're still not ready to give up, to jettison the Mered HaGita'ot Association. Yoshev Rosh Yud Shprintzak, Chairman Y. Shprintzak. I call upon the chairman of the subcommittee of the Committee of the Knesset, member of Knesset Nurak, to present us the decision regarding Yom HaShoah. Mordechai Nurak gets up. Hashamayim bochim, Eretz bocha v'Yisrael bochim. The heavens are weeping, the earth is weeping, Israel is weeping. Bayit givoha, distinguished chamber. Achim v'achayot litzara, brothers and sisters in grief. In the name of the Committee of the Knesset, I'm honored to appear before you with a serious and important resolution. And what follows is this deeply gripping, emotional description of what he's feeling. On the one hand, he lost everything, and his life is shattered. He lost his wife, not lost, his wife was killed, and his children were killed. He's by himself now. On the other hand, oh my God, I can't believe it, I am standing at the podium of a Knesset in a relatively new founded state of Israel, in my wildest imagination. I could never believe that such a thing is possible. So he has conflicting emotions. Personally, he's a mess. Nationally, he's like, wow, this is just incredible. And he launches into a description of the results of the subcommittee meetings. And in the course of his discussion says the following. Our ancestors, we're now in Hebrew in the middle section at the bottom, first paragraph. Our ancestors, avotenu tiknu lima'ora'od shonim, our ancestors established days of fasting and mourning to commemorate various events. Beginning of the second line at the bottom, kamo, for example, like what's an example of a day that was set aside to commemorate various events, like Chaf B'Sivan, like the 20th of the Fast of Sivan, and others, which cannot possibly be compared to the enormous tragedy of our days. Well, we have a precedent to establish a day. The single, sole, solitary precedent in the totality of Jewish history that is adduced at this critical moment by Rabbi Nurak, as he, for the first time, is introducing the Israeli public to this concept that we need to set aside a day to commemorate the Holocaust, the only precedent, the 20th of Sivan. That's where he goes. the 20th of Sivan equals anti-Tisha B'Av. It's not the ninth day of Av. You might think that we have this whole tradition, the ninth day of Av, the destruction of the temple. We don't need to do Holocaust Memorial Day on the ninth day of Av. We have a precedent that brings us out of that. And the only date is the date of the 20th of Sivan. Now, he is assuming that his audience sitting there and the audience listening on the radio and the audience who's going to read this the next day have a clue of what that is. Aren't you glad you're listening to this recording? Otherwise, you'd have no idea what's he talking about. How many people today have any idea of what this association is? By now we know Blois 1171, and for sure Khmelnytsky 1650, 20th of Sivan. Everybody knows about that. All you have to do is say 20th of Sivan. You don't even have to make an association, and everybody knows what it is. And that is the only place, the only precedent that he adduces to argue in favor of a specific, separate, special day to commemorate the Holocaust. And he continues at the end of this sentence, if they made a special fast day on the 20th of Sivan, probably a reference to Khmelnytsky, let's say 20,000 Jews, horrible, sad, and tragic, doesn't compare to 6 million. If 20,000 Jews, let's say he thought it was 100,000 Jews. Let's say he thought it was 200,000 Jews. If you're going to set aside a separate day to commemorate that, then for sure, you have to set aside a separate day to commemorate the Holocaust. He's not suggesting, as others later did, that Holocaust Memorial Day should be on the 20th of Sivan. That's not what he's suggesting. We already saw three other dates, none of which were the 20th of Sivan. But he's suggesting that this historical precedent shows us, points the way to be able to establish and have precedent for establishing a separate day to commemorate the Holocaust. If they did it then, She'ein lahashvotam bishum panim, can't possibly be compared El ha-tragedia ha-kabira shel yameinu, to the awful, horrific, heavy, terrible tragedy, the enormous tragedy of our times. And then he continues. We need to choose a specific date. So we have now a precedent. So now when should it be? We know we could do this. We know it's appropriate for us to do this. We know that we have support in Jewish tradition to do this. Okay, so now we're good to go. We're going to have a date. When should it be? Question is a good question. Holocaust lasted for 6 years. It's not like the day the temple was destroyed. It's not like the day the Talmud was burned. It's not like 31, 32, 33 Jews are burnt in Blois. It's all one day. You want to remember it. You're going to remember it on the day it happened. But what day are you going to choose? Having determined that we can have a day, so now when should we have it? We need to choose, next paragraph, a specific date. And he gives three rationales, three things to keep in mind. We need a specific date which would be appropriate both to the time when most of the slaughter of European Jewry took place. Number one, if you took a graph and you put on the graph spring, summer, fall, winter, and you put on the graph 1939, 1940, 41, all the way through 45, and you plot the destruction of European Jewry, you will conclude that most of the Jews, the 6 million Jews who were killed in the springtime. And it makes a lot of sense, because in the winter it's too cold, and in the summer it's too hot, and the spring is right after a winter when not a lot could be going on, so now we're gearing up again, now it's a little bit thawing the weather. So what happens in the springtime? That's when most of the Jews were killed, so appropriate criteria number one, or rationale number one, we should have it in the springtime, during the time when most of the slaughter of European Jewry took place. Number two, we should narrow it down a little bit. We should do it at the time when ghetto uprisings took place in the month of Nisan. Now, not all ghetto uprisings took place in this month. There were others, but they were insignificant compared to T, capital T, ghetto uprising, the Warsaw Ghetto, which absolutely did at least begin in the month of Nisan, and probably half of it lasted through the month of Nisan. That's number two. And in the days of the Sefirah, according to Jewish tradition, the days between Passover and Shavuot are known as the days of counting. There is a biblical obligation to count the days. Today is the first day. Today is the second day. Today is the third day, all the way until the holiday of Shavuot. What's significant about the time between Passover and the holiday of Shavuot, during which many holy communities were destroyed at the hands of the Crusaders, the progenitors of the Nazis? Avot avotehem shel hanatzim. You know exactly what he's referring to. You are all learned Jewish historian scholars. When were the Jewish communities during the time of the Crusades? You know their names, Speyer, Worms, and Mainz, destroyed. Speyer, 8th day of Iyar, a little bit after Passover. Worms, 23rd of Iyar, 1st day of Sivan. Mainz, 3rd day of Sivan. It's not Shavuot yet. Right in the middle, right between Passover and Shavuot, is exactly when the Crusaders came and destroyed the Jewish people. So you know what we're going to do? That is a real significant reason why we should frame this destruction during the time of that destruction, because those who destroyed us then are Avot Avotehem Shel Hanatzim. They are the fathers of the fathers. They are the progenitors of the Nazis. So we're now linking Holocaust to Crusades. And we're putting it during this time for three reasons. Number one, it's the springtime. Most Jews were killed in the springtime. If I have to choose a time to commemorate the destruction, I'll choose a time when most of the Jews were destroyed. Most Jews were destroyed in this season more than any other season. Number two, ghetto uprising. That is front and center. That's the only way we could possibly get this through and make this meaningful in Israel, is if we link it to some heroic act. And number three, we will link it to the destruction of the Crusaders, which, as we know from unit number three, happened precisely exactly during this time. Rabbi Nurak delivers an impassioned speech, very impassioned speech. After he finishes, Yosef Shprintzak calls for a moment of silence. And the transcript in the Divrei Knesset, in the Knesset publication, indicates everybody was silent for a moment, and then the session is closed, and nothing happens. Nothing happens. And I read this for the first time a number of years ago, and I wondered, so what happened? So I turn pages. So I have the Divrei Knesset. The Divrei Knesset is enormous. It fills up a whole bookshelf. And I'm turning pages and I'm turning pages, and I try to find an index and I can't find an index, and I'm turning pages. And lo and behold, I would say probably a couple hours later, maybe 7,000 pages later, here's Rabbi Nurak again, stands up in front of the Knesset, text number four. On June 18th, 1958, Rabbi Nurak ascends the podium of the Knesset once again to address this issue. And you have the English translation on the first part of text number four. You have part of the Hebrew original on the second part of text number four. Mordechai Nurak, here he is again. It's 7 years later. Esteemed chamber. On the 6th of Nisan, on April 12, 1951, it was my privilege to bring before the Knesset, in the name of the committee of the Knesset, a resolution regarding Holocaust and Ghetto Uprising Day. We just saw a little piece of that speech. The Honorable Speaker of the Knesset then declared with the unanimous assent of the Exalted House the following words: I announce a resolution. The first Knesset declares and establishes the 27th of the month of Nisan each year as Holocaust and Ghetto Uprising Day, an everlasting remembrance day for the House of Israel. It's called Holocaust and Ghetto Uprising Day. It's still called Holocaust and Ghetto Uprising Day. That's what he says it was called in 1951. That's how he's referring to it now. At that time, now, after quoting from Sprintzak, Nurak now in 1958, continues and says, at that time we settled for a declaration only, without commentary or details, because we hoped that the government would concern itself to make corrections and issue directives that would ensure the dignity and sanctity of this day. A day that's a national day of mourning for the extermination of European Jewry for 6 million, and as a memorial tribute to the heroism of the ghetto fighters who salvaged the dignity of Israel. Next paragraph. To our sorrow, however, we do not see that the people dwelling in Zion are especially sensitive to and mindful of the importance and sanctity of this day. All that happened in 1951 was they made an announcement. We passed a resolution that this is a special. Nothing changed. Nothing happened. On the ground, it's exactly the same. Places of amusement are wide open on this day. The radio plays festive and merry music, dance music, words of jest, display windows if you walk up and down the streets of Rehov Yafo or Allenby. So all of the department stores, the display windows are bursting with great light. And as such, there is joy and pleasure instead of melancholy and bereavement. For this reason, 7 years later, I'm getting up and I say this is not acceptable. There's a serious need to enact a law, it's not just a resolution, that will give Holocaust Day legally and eternally the character that is appropriate for it. Starting from schools have to do something to mark this. But it has to start with the schools. The first thing is schools, is the youth. They have to be taught this. To closing the shops for a particular amount of time, to closing places of entertainment, to turning off lights and display windows, up to radio programming and memorial services in the synagogue. So he lays out what he suggests to be the bones of this law. And here he is again, exact same paragraph as last time. Our ancestors, Avotenu Tiknu Lema'ora Od Shonim, it's exactly the same. After all, our ancestors established days of fasting and mourning to commemorate various events like, what's the only like? From a whole, I don't know, millennia and a half of Jewish tragedy and fast days, like? The fast of the 20th of Sivan and others, okay, I know that there were also others, which cannot possibly be compared to the enormous tragedy of our day. Less than a year later, text number 5, a law is passed designating the 27th day of the month of Nisan as the day to commemorate the Holocaust. And look at the name. Look at the name. We're now on text number 5. Hebrew, Chok Yom HaZikaron L'Shoah V'Ligivurah, English, Holocaust and Heroism Remembrance Day. What was dumped? What didn't make the final cut? The ghetto uprising. Ghetto uprising is not in the final iteration, and the reason is quite clear. Ghetto uprising is is an infinitesimal amount. All the other Jews said, wait a minute, what about me? And I threw a Molotov cocktail and I blew up a railway track. I fought against somebody somewhere. I knifed a Nazi when I jumped into him in the forest. And the vast majority of Jews said, I lived a life of ethics and human decency under the most horrific conditions. I gave away a piece of bread to somebody who was dying in the concentration camp. I tore off a little piece of my blanket. And there's no place for me here. What about me? What about the vast majority of Jews? And so the decision was made to substitute and to put in givurah. Givurah means heroism. Who is heroic? Everybody's heroic. The Warsaw ghetto fighter is heroic, and the partisan is heroic, and the Jew who demonstrated human decency in the face of the most despicable human depravity, that's also heroism. Everybody now feels that they're included in this particular day of commemoration. And that's the name of the day until now. The day is not just Yom HaShoah, it's not just Holocaust Day, it's Yom HaShoah v'hagavura, it's heroism. And it's a heroism that represents the heroism that everybody could feel that they're a part of, not limited to this ridiculously infinitesimal percentage of the 250 people who fought in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Rule number one, law number one. The 27th of Nisan is Holocaust and Heroism Remembrance Day. Why the 27th of Nisan? You notice that until now, we have no statement, there's no evidence, there's no marking this particular day. Nothing happened on the 27th of Nisan that is particularly more significant that it should be the day than any other day, even within the context of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. It was right in the middle of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. I read everything I could read on the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. A lot, there's a lot. And I try to push my way through languages other than English and Hebrew and Yiddish, and nothing. I mean, it was a very sad day, but nothing any different than the 28th day or the 26th day. So to me, it's clear that it was a political compromise because the Tzizling faction wanted it on Passover or the day before Passover. The Nurak faction didn't want it in the month of Nisan. The month of Nisan is like a happy month. It's known in Hebrew as Chodesh HaGe'ulah. It's the time of redemption. According to Jewish tradition, you don't give eulogies on the month in the month of Nisan. So you have to get around it. So you say, today is the month of Nisan, so I'm not giving a eulogy. I'm just going to describe the greatness of the person who passed away. Or we're going to now extrapolate from the life of the deceased lessons, but it's not a eulogy. So you have to somehow get around it. But technically speaking, it's a time of redemption. So he wanted it after the month of Nisan. His problem was, or their problem was, if you go too far after the month of Nisan, the next month is the month of Iyar, and on the 5th of the month of Iyar is like a really significant day in the state of Israel because that day is Israel Independence Day. So you can't go too far in because you're going to bump up against Israel Independence Day. The day before Israel Independence Day is another day of memory for the soldiers in Israel. So what am I going to do? I don't do it here. I'm going to do it there. So we're going to just figure it out and say, okay, 27th of Nisan. It's 1 week after Passover, the end of Passover. And it's 1 week before Israel Independence Day. So the 27th of Nisan, so basically nobody's happy. Nobody's really happy, but everybody understands that this is the way it is, and we're going to have a day, and it's going to be a very important day. Devoted each and every year to communing with the memory of the Holocaust that the Nazis and their accomplices brought upon the Jewish people. That's the first thing we're going to do. And with the memory of the acts of valor, Ma'aseh HaGivura, and in the text of the law, Ma'aseh HaMered, and in the acts of uprising. So the uprising still has an echo in the text of the law, even though it's not in the title of the law. The 27th of Nisan falls on a Friday, so then we're going to do it the day before. Section number two on Remembrance Day. There shall be 2 minutes of silence countrywide. Anybody who has been in Israel on Yom HaShoah, as I have been, and I ended up, and I'm so glad that I ended up, but it wasn't a conscious strategy on the a priori. I ended up on the Kvish Echad, on the highway between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, right at 11 o'clock, and the traffic stops. A minute and a half ago, the drivers are cutting one another off like crazy, screaming bloody curses at each other, rolling down the window and doing acts that I don't want to replicate, and saying words that I don't want to replicate, killing each other. What do you do? All of a sudden, 11 o'clock, everything stops. It's you have to see it to believe it. Maybe there's a YouTube somewhere. And it stops. And not only does it stop, everybody gets out of the car, everybody gets out of the bus and stands there for 2 minutes, and you hear the siren. That's the law. The first statement in ways of observing in subsection number 2 is there should be a 2-minute silence countrywide during which all work and all travel on the roads shall cease. Memorial services, mass assembly, ceremonies of communion shall be held in army camps, institutes of education, flags on public buildings shall be lowered to half mast. Radio broadcast shall express the uniqueness of the day and places of entertainment. Only matters appropriate to its spirit shall be taken up. Number 3, the minister whom the government shall deputize for this purpose shall, in consultation with the Yad Vashem Remembrance Authority, issue directives for how this day should be observed. By now, Yad Vashem, which is the national place for Holocaust commemoration in Israel, has already been established. It was established in 1953 as the formal national site for Holocaust commemoration. So they're going to weigh in on exactly what should be done. So now we have a day that's set aside, and now we have a time when the state of Israel commemorates the Holocaust. Parenthetically, text number 6, there is another day that was established by the United Nations in 2005, and that is sort of universal Holocaust Remembrance Day. It's something that at least we should be aware of, that the world, as it were, designates January 27. If you look all the way down at the bottom, reaffirming the Holocaust, this is a resolution of the United Nations from 1 November 2005, the General Assembly determined on that day, reaffirming that the Holocaust, which resulted in the murder of one-third of the Jewish people, along with countless members of other minorities, will forever be a warning to all people of the dangers of hatred. We resolve that the United Nations will designate 27 January as an annual International Day of Commemoration in memory of the victims of the Holocaust. What happened on 27 January? Why 27 January? What happened on 27 January was that the Russians liberated Auschwitz. On January 27, 1945. I am actually offended by this choice, because conceptually it just really disturbs me. I'm going to choose a day when the Holocaust was over, when the Holocaust finished, when the concentration camp was liberated, in order to commemorate the whole Holocaust. To me, it makes no sense whatsoever. It's like the opposite of the beginning. I'm not going to do the beginning, I'm going to do the end. The last day that Auschwitz was in business was on January 27th. How can I use a day of liberation to commemorate 6 years of destruction? So the whole concept here is alien to me and actually upsetting to me. But that's what it is in terms of the international community. Once the Knesset passed a law that the Holocaust should be commemorated on the 27th of Nisan, the question arose as to the attitude of the traditional community on this day. Notice now, the issue is not a fast day. We're not talking now about a ritually mandated fast day. We're talking about a day of commemoration, devoid of formal, specific religious ritual or practices. And it is to this question that we will draw our attention in our next and in our final presentation. Given the fact that I'm facing such tremendous challenges, how am I going to be able to put one foot in front of another foot tomorrow and to be able to believe in God and to be able to have families and to be able to think about planning for and assuring a future for the Jewish people?